This is Orson Welles, speaking from London.
To keep you in suspense.
I had a be everyday grind.
Night transmissions. Between 1980 and 1983, the CBC had a nifty program called Nightfall that produced many absolutely excellent episodes. From July 11th of 1980, we have Nightfall's adaptation of The Monkey's Paw, which is a very famous short story by W.W. Jacobs, first published in England in 1902. You probably know the story, even if you haven't read the short story, or seen one of the literally innumerable adaptations for screen, television, radio. Even if you've missed all that, you're still going to be familiar with the premise. I don't know if this was the first time it was ever done. I doubt that. But it's the story in which three wishes are granted, and the wishes come true, but the price is enormous.
In the dream, you are falling, lost in the listening distance, as dark locks in. Nightfall. Good evening. Tonight we have a special treat for you. A new production of a story that refuses to die. I ask those of you who may have heard it before to warn your loved ones that we are about to present The Monkey's Paw.
Oh, that was lovely. Well, I hope I remember how to behave at table.
Oh, come now, Sergeant Major.
You may find us the barbarians, Jeremy.
The manners of the outposts of empire we hear. They're refined beyond anything we could dream of.
Oh, in a sergeant's mess. In India, on the frontier.
Are you sorry to have left it, sir?
Oh, what, the frontier? I'm afraid, Herbert, that I've brought too much of it back with me.
Oh, nothing shows good manners like a healthy appetite, Sergeant Major. Do have some more.
Well, I don't mind if I do it. Oh, thank you. That ain't all. Oh, you've done yourself proud, you two. This house.
Well, it's been a struggle.
But it's paid for. but... £200.
And I'm going to earn that.
Oh, you're working already, lad.
I am. I'm apprenticing to be a stationary engineer.
Oh. More in Meggins.
Oh, the old works. They're still going strong.
Huge now. Yeah. Jeremy, you'd not know the place. Oh. And the machinery.
Terrifying. I had one look inside. The whirling and banging and sparks and smoke.
Our foreman Smitty says, if you like working at Moore and Megan's, you'll feel at home on a battlefield.
Like Chinese Gordon.
Have you missed England all these years, Sergeant Major?
Missed it? Oh, Fred's never told you about my family, eh? They weren't as well off as his. Well off. In the county workhouse. There's no job in a fine shop for me. But, yes, we remember our young days fondly, don't we? The anger fades.
You've done well in the army.
Very well.
I'm still breathing, yes.
China, Africa, India. Most of all, I'd like to see India.
India? Oh, you're better off where you are, lad. It's too much everything, India. There's too many things off the map.
Off the map?
Here. Here, I'll show you something. What's that?
Oh, small animals, sir.
Well, not quite. It's a monkey's paw.
Oh, what are you doing with a thing like that?
Oh, well, perhaps I shouldn't be showing it.
Jeremy, don't put it away. Let's see it. Here, give us a look.
Well, I'd
You're turning all red. Caught you out, eh? A secret?
Oh, secret? 21 years in India. Here, you remember the upbringing that you and I had, Fred? The Queen, England, Empire, John Wesley and all? And then suddenly to be plunged into a world where gods have arms like beetles' legs.
That's blasphemous!
Sir, will the monkey's fingers work if you pull the tendons? Like a rabbit's foot?
Oh, I'm leaving the table if this talk keeps on.
Don't get carried away, Dorothy.
I must tell you. See, I was in India less than a fortnight when I was trapped in the midst of a festival called the Kali Puja. It's the darkest night of the month. Adoration of Kali, wife of Kala, god of death and of time. Only a great slaughter of sheep and goats can appease her. Single saber stroke to lop off the beast's head.
Oh, you old Sergeant Major, please.
That, Mrs. Todd, is India.
That cannot be all of India.
No, there is gentleness there, too. But it's the mysteries of India that stay with you. There's no way to shake them. You think you have as you sail up past Aden and the Suez. You feel you're a sensible, no-nonsense Englishman again. And then, out of the blue, in a cottage as cozy as this, the shock of something quite...
quite...
something quite frightful.
Like your monkey's paw.
I'd rather you forgot it.
Let's see it again. Just once more.
Oh, very well, if you insist. Look at it. It's an ordinary little paw dried to a mummy.
May I, sir?
What, examine it? See if you can find the mystery.
Tendons too dry to move.
Well, better look next time.
So what's special about it?
A spell. Put on it by a holy man, a fakir.
Spell?
To prove that fate rules our lives.
How?
He decreed that 3 people, each in turn, would have 3 wishes granted by it. 3 people, 3 wishes, and no more.
And did the 3 people get their wishes?
2 did. The 3rd is yet to come.
Jeremy, you've not given it a whirl.
I have. That was the 2nd.
And were they...
granted?
They were.
What were they?
Oh, they were small enough. But I shall never tell how they were answered.
Oh, my. Sergeant Major, you are making a fine spoof of it. Even your face has gone white.
Yes.
And, the 1st person who wished...
was a friend of mine, a lance corporal from Aberdeen. I don't know his 1st 2 wishes. His 3rd was for death. That's how I got the paw.
But you've finished with it?
And you still keep it?
But what good is it now, sir?
I did have some idea of selling it, but no.
Jeremy, if you talk up that monkey's paw with others as convincingly as you've done with us...
it's caused enough mischief.
If you could have another 3 wishes, sir, would you want them?
No. My God, no. No one must ever ask a wish of this thing again. Now I'll be done with it.
Jeremy, what did you do that for? Toss it in the fire. Quick, Bert, up and fish it out. Hurry, hurry.
Right. Barely scorched. A few hairs.
Back in the fire, lad. Let it burn.
If you don't want it, Jeremy, give it to me.
Here, Dad.
If you keep it, Fred, don't you blame me for what happens.
Fair enough, Jeremy.
No, don't be a fool. Pitch it on the fire like a sensible fella.
How does it work, What's the magic trick?
You're serious?
Serious as you, Jeremy. You're the one who convinced us this thing works.
You hold it in your right hand and make your wish aloud.
That's all?
Except for the consequences.
What you might do, Fred dear, wish for another pair of hands from India for me. All the work around this house.
If you must wish, wish for something sensible.
Sensible?
I warn you, the spell of the paw is no joke.
Oh, sensible. Sensible. I'll put it away. I can't take this seriously now.
You will. When you discover the joke is on you.
Bye, Jeremy.
Come see us again.
Oh, I will. Thank you. He's very kind of you. Lovely. Good night.
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 Herbert, shouldn't you be changing your clothes and getting off to the works? Mowing Meggins?
Got an hour yet, till the midnight shift.
I like your Sergeant Major, Fred.
Do you know? He's changed. But most of the lad I knew is still there.
Any of the lad he knew here, Dad?
Oh, not bloody likely. Catch me believing a yarn like that.
Did you give him anything for it, dear?
The monkey's paw. Oh, a trifle. He didn't want to take it, but I made him.
Ah, some money banking him. And he took advantage of you. I like him the better for that.
He pressed me again to throw it away.
Not bloody likely. Why, we're going to be rich. And I'll refuse to work nights at Moe and Meggins.
Wish to be an emperor, Freddy.
Looks like... Yeah, see, it looks like the hand of a child.
Shouldn't be so greedy on your first wish, Dad. I mean, an emperor's a lot to ask.
I don't know what to ask for, that's a fact.
Well, if you've got everything you want, I've not.
Good. You take it and wish.
All that thing in my hand, I couldn't.
What about the mortgage, Mum? Dad, if you cleared that...
The £200? Hey, would you like that, Dorothy? Not too grasping, frivolous?
Oh, I don't know when you two are serious.
As serious as you, Mum. Do it, Dad.
I wish...
Don't anybody giggle.
I wish... £200. No!
Freddy?
What is it, Dad?
It moved.
What?
The monkey's paw. Cooled up. Stiff and solid as a walnut, then suddenly...
What?
It twisted in my hand.
But look, there's no money coming out of the walls.
But look in your wallet, Fred. It's the most sensible place for wish for money to appear.
Yeah. Feels no fatter. £1.02.
Well, so much for that.
Oh, yeah, but pick up the paw before you step on it.
Shall I give it to the cat?
But put it on the shelf.
As I wished, it twisted my hand like a snake.
Nonsense, Fred. It's just your fancy. Well, no harm done.
Gave me a shock all the same. Well, come on, Dorothy. Off to bed.
Yeah. Yeah, but you will put the cat out when you take off to work.
Right.
And the light.
I will. Night, Mum. Dad.
Night.
Any of the lad you know here.
Of weather. Cloudy. Gusty.
Opening shop this morning, Freddy?
No, it's Joe Barnes' turn. I can dawdle.
Oh, I do hope it doesn't rain before Herbert gets off shift and home.
What you looking at? Out window.
There's a man out there on the street.
Never seen a man out there.
Well, he's peering at the house. That's the fourth time he's passed the gate.
Oh, real tough. And he's coming in.
Oh, dear. Answer the door, Freddy, while I get rid of this apron.
He's not a lord, Dorothy. Yes, sir?
Hey, Mr. Todd. I come from Moe and Megan's.
Oh, do come in, won't you?
Thank you.
My missus.
How do you do?
My name's Tilbury. I was asked to call on you.
Oh, excuse the mess, Mr. Tilbury. We weren't expecting. Do sit down.
I'll not intrude more than a moment.
He's come from Moe and Megan's, dear.
Oh. Is anything wrong? Nothing's happened to Herbert.
There, Dorothy. Don't jump to conclusions.
Mrs. Todd, Mr. Todd. Oh. I'm sorry.
He's hurt. Is he hurt?
I'm afraid... Aye, he's badly hurt. But he's not in any pain.
Oh, thank God. Thank... You see, Freddy, it's not so bad. I thought... Oh! I was afraid. But it's not so bad. It's all right. No. It's not.
Your Herbert was caught in the machinery, Mrs. Todd. He was drawn in among the pulleys and the big flywheel.
Caught? In the machinery?
What's he saying, Fred? Don't believe him. No, he's been such a careful boy, Herbert. Always. Mr. Tilbury, they've mistaken him for some other... Tell him, Fred. Tell him.
He was the only one left. We lost three babies.
We all wish we could undo this.
It's hard.
The firm wishes me to convey their sincere sympathy with you and your great loss, and to say that Moe and Megan's disclaim all liability, but in consideration of your son's services, they wish to present you with a certain sum as compensation.
How? What?
£200.
You didn't say
200. Here, Mr. Todd.
Come back, Dorothy. What are you doing out of bed?
What was I doing in bed?
Aren't you cold?
Does it matter?
No. Nothing matters. Yes. It matters that you don't...
Don't what?
Come back to bed. You'll catch your death, my dear, wandering about in the middle of the night...
Oh! Fred! Why have we forgotten? The paw! The monkey's paw!
Yeah, what's the matter? What?
Want
it?
You've not destroyed it.
I've not touched it. No, why should I? Since I made that wish and dropped it.
Where is it?
I don't know. Didn't Herbert pick it up?
It's not in his pocket. He didn't take it with him.
I think he... He set it down somewhere in the parlour.
Oh, I just now thought of it. Why didn't we before?
Think of what?
The other two wishes. We only made one.
Was that not enough?
No, we'll have one more. Go down and get it, Fred, quickly. We'll wish our boy alive again.
Oh, God, you're mad. My wish and what happened at the works at Moe and Megan's said nothing. nothing to do with each other.
Oh, get it. Get it quickly and wish.
Dorothy, for God's
sake. Get it, get it. Get
you
it,
don't
wish.
Know what wish. You're asking. Go on, come back to bed.
Oh, we had the first wish granted. Why not the second?
A coincidence.
Go and get it and wish, Fred.
Dorothy. Hard Herbert has been dead for 10 days. He was smashed and pulled apart by those shafts and the flywheel. I could only recognize him by the bits of his clothing. If he was too terrible for anyone to see then, how could you
bring
now?
Him back? Do you think I fear this lost child I bore? I nursed him. I raised him. Am I to fear him now?
All right. All right, Dorothy. So be it. We'll go downstairs and ask it for Herbert.
Wish. Fred, wish. For our son.
It's foolish and wicked.
Do it. As Sergeant Major Morris told you to, hold it in your right hand and wish aloud.
And remember, Jeremy warned us of the consequences. The third wish was for...
Wish.
I wish. My son. Alive.
Nothing.
Thank God. It didn't even move in my hand.
But you wish?
Exactly as Jeremy instructed.
Then why?
Oh, my darling. We can't have what nature won't allow. Come back to bed now, Dorothy. There's a good girl. Come along now.
Yes, Fred. I'll be up. Herb, please.
Animal outside.
It's Herbert.
I don't hear anything.
It's our son. It's him.
Dorothy, for God's sake, stay here. Don't go down.
Let go of me. It's my boy. Of course he couldn't get here sooner. The cemetery's 2 miles away.
Dorothy, there's nothing. Don't go.
Why are you holding me back? Let go. There he is. I've got to open the door for him.
You can't let it in.
Our own son. Afraid of him. Your own son.
I'm afraid for you. You didn't see him when they pulled him from the flywheel. And he's been 10 days in the earth.
Let me go. coming, Herbert. I'm coming. Yes, dear boy. Just let me get the bolt off. The bolt? Fred, come down and help me. The bolt's jammed and I can't open the door to let Herbert in.
Oh, dear God, don't let it happen. Why did I make the second? Second. Third and last. There's one wish left. Where is it? Where's the monkey's paw? Downstairs. Downstairs. Dorothy, don't open the door.
I can't budge it. The bolt is stuck. Help me.
The monkey's paw. Here.
I need to open the latch that killed you. Here.
It's coming loose.
Mom.
The latch. The bolt.
Mom.
Wish.
Mom.
My son. God's own true. Dead. Again.
Herbert, my child, my son. Nothing. No one.
Only the wind, Dorothy, and the leaves in the moonlight, and the gate banging in the wind. All so natural. Nothing out of place. See?
You wished Herbert dead. You sent him back to his grave.
You wouldn't have wanted him alive. So mutilated and in such agony. Why didn't you wish him alive and whole?
Why didn't you? With your last wish. Wish him whole.
Oh, God. Why didn't I?
Oh, so natural. Nothing out of place.
That was pretty effective, wasn't it? Well, before we go on to the next segment of the show, we're going to take a very brief break here. And when we come back, we're going to get straight into suspense. This time of an episode from November the 24th of 1942. You may well be familiar with the Body Snatchers, the story of Burke and Hare, and others involved in the resurrection business. The resurrection business was the business of supplying to doctors fresh corpses. And since there was a shortage of fresh corpses, Burke and Hare went into the business of, shall we say, creating fresh corpses. This particular story is not the story of Burke and Hare, although that story, that fact, is referenced early in the play.
howling step in the dead of night. The crime that is almost committed. The stir of nerves at the ticking of the clock. A rescue that might be too late. Or the murderer who might get away. Mystery and intrigue and dangerous adventure. We invite you to enjoy stories that keep you in suspense.
For Suspense, tonight we present The Body Snatchers by John Dixon Carr. Up to the year 1832, the body snatchers terrorized England. According to the law, only 4 bodies a year could legally be supplied to the surgeons for anatomical study. And even these were a monopoly granted to the Barbers and Surgeons Company of London. But the study of surgery had to go on. In hundreds of medical schools all over England, perfectly reputable doctors were compelled to buy bodies and ask no questions. In 1828, burst the scandal of Burke and Hare, who found grave robbing too slow and murdered 16 persons in order to supply Dr. Knox of Edinburgh. And so, out of basic good purpose, sprang the evil of
the body snatcher.
Turn back the clock now to a cold night just 110 years ago. Look into the brick kitchen of a house on Wandsworth Common, not far from London. There in the light of a tallow dip sits old Mother Slade in her draggled bonnet.
What's a keeping 'em? 2 hours. 2 mortal hours for the Dutch clock. And they're not here yet.
Mother Slade?
And the graveyard not half a mile off. And once I thought I heard church bells ring. And one.
Mother Slade, did you call?
No, my girl, I did not call.
But I thought I...
And what are you doing up at this hour, my girl?
I was only locking up, Mother Slade.
Ain't it enough to have taken you over from a good-for-nothing mother, not worth the gunpowder to blow her up?
Please, Mother Slade.
And given you a good home, and brought you up practically like a lady, with only the housework to do?
I'm sorry, Mother Slade. Only I wish you wouldn't talk like that about me own mother.
And what do you do, Peggy Lester? You stop up until this hour. You mislay me snuff box 20 times a day.
I was only going to say, I thought I heard a horse and cart in the lane.
In our lane?
Yes, Mother Slade. There it is now.
Yes. Easy, my dears. Drive easy with the merchandise. The doctors don't like it if you bump the merchandise.
Merchandise, Mother Slade? What's that?
I'll tell you what it is, my girl.
I didn't mean anything, Mother Slade.
It's your Uncle Matt and your cousin Rob are coming home from their business. That's what it is. You hear that, Piggy Lister?
I didn't mislay your snuff box. It's on the table.
And if you don't want me to take my fingernails to you instead of a strap, you get on up to bed this minute, do you?
Yes, Mother Slade.
I'm a-coming, my dears. Don't be impatient. I'm a-coming. Nasty dim light this candle gives. Oh, old Mother Slade has got the rheumatics so cruel she can hardly move. Just pull back the bar, open the door. Well, Matt, did you get it?
Did we get it? Strike my blind, but that's a good one, ain't it, Rob?
Stand the gad, cord, you get inside and close the door.
They ain't after you.
Ain't they? Can't you hear anything?
I thought I heard church bells.
More like a perishing funeral bell if you ask me.
Take it easy, Rob. Take it easy. We've shaken them off.
Have we? I wish I was as certain as some people. The spades and sack is still in the cart.
Let them stay. Who's a coming to find them?
Then you didn't get it after all, you thick foul pair.
Now, don't you start a blaming us.
Yeah, you set your potato trap, Mother Slade, or that'll make you set it.
What happened?
I'll tell you what happened. He was too quick, that's what. The girl was only buried this afternoon.
The sooner the better, my dear. What's the good of the merchandise if it ain't fresh, eh?
You hold your noise and listen. We left the horse and cart outside like we always do. He creeps up to the lych gate of the churchyard.
Walk softly, Matt. Walk softly, Rob, in your oily beaver hats and neckcloths, under the starlight and the white frosted elms. Take care of the graves, too. Spring guns may be set in some of them to protect the dead from marauders. And if the coffin is one of those new iron ones, all your labor will be in vain. Open the gate softly.
Might such a bloody row with them shovels.
Oh, I can't help it. I'm lousy down with all this stuff.
Oh, and who'll do all the work when we do get there? I will.
Matt.
Aye?
Listen.
I can't hear nothing except your teeth a-chattering.
Matt, there's other people besides us in this here churchyard.
Aye, 200 or 300 deaders. But they won't bother us.
I mean living people.
Don't talk so.
Somebody's got a dark lantern. I've seen it flash past the gravestones.
Oh? Yeah.
Can't you see it now? It's coming straight toward us.
Yes, I see him. Come on.
They've seen us, Matt.
He's a bastard. Well, down beyond the gravestones. Crouch down. They can't shoot through stone.
Matt, it says here, sacred to the memory
it's
of
the girl's relatives. They've been watching her grave. If only I had my barkers. First time in 2 years I've gone without a brace of pistols, and this happens.
But you ain't got your barkers, Matt Patterson.
I got what's just as good. Give me a shovel.
What are you going to do?
Charge them. This here shovel's got a nice edge.
Are you daft?
They'll have to take time out to reload, won't they? Hear that? Somebody's started the bill. That'll bring down every peeler within a mile. If you want a five and ticket and a neck in your own rope, stop where you are. But if you don't want to get scragged before your time, follow me.
That's all there is to it, Mother Slade. He went out by the gate and blow me if they could stop us.
You perishing numbskulls. Did he recognize you?
No. We had our neckerchiefs around our eyes.
And did you do it?
I don't know. There's blood on the shovel.
No, there ain't, Mother Slade. I wiped it off.
Anyway, we're here. What I want now is a Christian fire to sit by. And a drop of spirits to warm my stomach.
There's no spirits in the house, Matt Patterson.
Don't you lie to me, you ugly man.
Let go of me, Matt Patterson. I'm warning you.
You better let it go, Matt.
Yeah.
There's no spirits. Only half a loaf of bread. Don't I know it? I haven't tasted a drop of gin all day. And the black dog's on me back.
Well?
Hark at what I say. The doctor was promised a corpse tonight. All right, dearie, he gets a corpse tonight.
There's that funeral bell again.
What's the clock, old hag? Come on, spit it out.
A nice young corpse without any trouble or bother.
Aye.
What about young Peggy upstairs?
Drunk me blind.
What about it, eh?
You'd have to be mighty careful.
Why?
You'd have to smother her with a pillow while I sit on her legs. That's what Burke and Eyre done up in Edinburgh. Then you don't leave any marks on them.
See? Here, off a tick, wait.
What? If the doctors see they've been polished off, just plain murdered, they won't have nothing to do with it. These ways, they don't like it.
Like it or not, dearie, they all do.
Who's buying the beast tonight?
Dr. George Arnold.
Him? The young fella out pulling weight?
That's the man, dearie.
But I thought he was too pious and holy to play.
That's what Dr. Arnold thought, too, till they started putting the screws on him at Bart's College. No corpse, they said to him. No lecture. No lecture, no students. It all comes to it, dearie, sooner or later.
What beats me is why they got to have these bodies. You'd think the doctors killed enough people as it is, without buying them after they was dead.
Don't you question the ways of Providence, Matt Patterson.
You can't do it, Matt. You can't do it, Mother Slade.
You stole that knife, Bob Plenty.
Do you want to wake the poor girl upstairs?
But you can't do it. This Cove Arnold, he knows her.
Arnold knows him.
He knows Peggy. Peggy Fair worships the ground he walks on.
Oh.
He set her arm once, and Mother Slade broke it, accidental-like, and she can't forget him. What's Arnold going to think when he opens up the sack and he finds...
What can Arnold do? He's bought her, ain't he? He can't go to the police and say he's bought her.
Peggy. Peggy, listen.
Don't do it, Mother Slade. Don't do it.
And how do you two thickheads know what Mother Slade is going to do?
You're going to kill her, ain't you?
Peggy. Peggy, listen.
I thought I heard her moving about upstairs.
You did, Mr. Milk and Water. She's on the stairs now.
Rob, you're the least to be depended on. Go out and fetch in the sack.
Don't do it. It'll bring us all bad luck.
Matt, you're a lad after me own heart. You stop where you are and do just as I tell you. Trim the candle. Let's have it all nice and snug.
What'll she bring, do you think, eh?
15 guineas. Maybe 20. Maybe more.
20 guineas? Strike me blind. But this is a way of doing business that I like.
Did you call me Mother Slade?
That's right, my Jackie. That's right, my little pet. Put your wrap around you and your slippers to keep your feet warm and come right down here to Mother Slade.
I'm coming, Mother Slade. I'm coming.
Who in those times would be a surgeon and still be an honest man? At that drugged hour of the night, look into the sitting room of a spacious house. Many candles are still alight there, though they have burned down nearly to their silver sockets. There's Chinese paper on the walls, and a Turkey carpet underfoot. In front of the fire, now almost out, sits Dr. George Arnold, with his bottle green coat and heavy hair.
Dr. Arnold, sir.
I beg your pardon, Mrs. Tancred.
Dr. Arnold, sir, it's gone 2:00.
Yes, so it has.
You've got a lecture to deliver tomorrow, and you'll be all worn out. Why don't you go on up to bed?
Mrs. Tancred.
Yes, sir?
You're a jewel of a housekeeper. I admire you, and I can't do without you, but... would you please go away and let me alone?
Sure, I'm very sorry, sir. No offense intended.
Stop. I shouldn't have said that. I'm thinking too much, perhaps.
I'm smoking too many cigars, if you'll excuse me.
Why must they keep tolling that bell at East Hill Church? Why must they keep it up all night?
Well, sir, Elsie says the parson told him to do it. Elsie?
Wait. Who is Elsie?
Dr. Arnold, sir. I know you're always up in the clouds, mooning over books and whatnot, but I did think you'd recognize the name of your own parlourmaid.
Oh, that Elsie. I see. Well?
Elsie says it's because of the murder in the churchyard.
What murder?
2 resurrection men. Body snatchers, sir. Oh, you wouldn't know anything about such people.
No, of course not.
They were caught trying to rob a grave, but they got away. One of them was a horrible big fellow. Spit Willie Kendrick's head open with the edge of a shovel. Is anything wrong, sir?
No, not exactly.
Well, I thought for a second, seeing how you looked.
Did they get the body?
Yes, sir. It was Willie Kendrick. His head was split open with a shovel.
No, I mean, did these resurrection men get what they were after?
No, sir.
Thank God.
Oh, you may well say that, Doctor.
Wasn't exactly speaking in the religious sense, but never mind.
What Elsie says, there are what she calls peelers all over the place.
Peelers?
Yes, these new policemen. After Sir Robert Peel. And somebody from the new detective police that they're using instead of the Bow Street runners.
Well, Mr. Tancred, I'm going to smoke one more cigar and then I'm going to bed.
Very good, sir.
You see, sometimes you give orders, then it's too late to recall them. Whatever the medical practice is, you can't look your conscience in the face afterwards. Then, I can't tell you how or why, a miracle comes along and saves you and you're free. You're... What was that?
Sounds like a horse and cart in the garage.
Mrs. Tancred.
Yes, Doctor.
Will you please go upstairs? Now make haste.
If it's visited, sir, or even a patient.
Mrs. Tancred, you heard my instructions. Obey them.
Sir, there's the front door.
Yes, I heard it. For the last time, go away. I will admit whatever visitors we have.
Yes, sir.
Good evening, dearie.
Oh, come into the sitting room here, Miss... Mrs. Slade.
No, sir. Just call me Mother Slade. It don't hardly seem natural or friendly to hear anything else. It's a pleasure to curtsy to you, Doctor. Phew. What a lovely room.
I suppose...
Your candles is going out, though. One by one. Poof. Then you'll be in the dark.
I suppose you've come to report failure.
Failure, dear?
I understand you didn't get what you went after.
Bless you, dearie. We got something just as good. Finest piece of merchandise you ever saw.
You haven't got it here.
Bless you, dearie. Mother Slade always keeps her word. Bring the merchandise in, you dears, so the doctor can see it.
Quiet, please.
Oh, of course, dearie, I forgot. The big fellow with the black eyebrows is Uncle Mac. The little fella with the watery eyes is Cousin Rob. And between them, in that sack, they're carrying...
Who is it in the sack?
19-year-old girl, dearie. Finest anatomical specimen you ever saw.
Merciful heavens.
If you want this here thing dumped, Governor,
easy now, man.
Why did you bring it here?
That's where you told us to bring it, dearie.
Why did you bring it to the front door? Why not to the surgery?
Only place in the house where there was lights, Governor. Hurry up now. Where do you want it?
Well, take it...
Yes, dearie?
Take it over and put it in the cupboard there, where I'm pointing.
This cupboard here, sir?
Yes, then close the cupboard door.
Shame on you two. Tracking your muddy boots over the doctor's lovely turkey carpet. Easy, my dears. Easy now.
All right, Robin.
Don't bruise the merchandise. Whatever you do, don't bruise the merchant, darling.
Right, my blind, what's the odds? She can't feel it now. There's your body, Mr. Sawbones. Now, let's see your money.
Well, just one moment before I give it to you.
There ain't no itch in this, is there? There better not be.
No, I made a bargain with you and I'll stick to it.
Thank you. That's uncommon genteel of you.
Kind of stand back, sir. You're two stone of fat heavier than I am, and you don't impress me.
Easy, Matt. Take it easy.
I want to ask only one question. Where did you get that body?
That's a question, dearie, what people in your profession don't ask.
Why not?
Because they don't dare. That's why.
Would the police be interested in where you got the body?
No, dearie. Not us so interested in as where we brought it to your house. It's your responsibility now.
Yes, I suppose it is. The victim wouldn't be, by any chance, that pretty little girl you used to treat so unmercifully.
You hold your noise about how I treated her.
I was rather fond of Peggy.
Oh, strike me blind. I think the sawbones...
Get out of this house, all of you. Go on, get out.
Not without that money, dearie. It's 20 guineas now.
There's money on the table under that newspaper. Take what you want, and get out of here before I...
Oh... What was that?
What was it?
A late visitor, I imagine.
Was you expecting anybody? Eh?
No.
Don't drop the lovely money, Rob. Don't drop it all over the carpet. Pick it up.
Is there a back way out of here?
Yes, it's the way you should have come. Through that arch and down the passage.
Thank you for the rhino, Governor. And no games, mind you. If you know what's good for me.
Good night, dearie. Remember, you've got the body now.
Yes. I've got the body now. Poor little devil.
Dr. Arnold, sir.
In heaven's name, Mrs. Tancred, haven't you gone to bed yet?
I had to get up, sir, to answer the bell.
Yes, of course. I'm sorry.
Dr. Arnold, What's the matter with you?
Matter?
You're as white as a ghost, and you're almost crying.
Am I? Well, we must remedy that.
It's so dark in here, I could barely see a city there. The candles going out one after another. Nothing but smoke and an ugly smell of grease. And that cupboard door.
What about that cupboard door?
Oh, I always declare, sir, it won't keep shut without any latch or bolt. If you'll excuse the little...
Mrs. Tancred, keep away from that cupboard.
What's wrong, sir? Are you ill, Ronnie?
No, but keep away from that cupboard. Who rang the bell?
Oh, dear, I was almost forgetting. It's that man Elsie was talking to us about.
What man?
The officer of the detective police, sir. He wants to see you.
Well, I'll see him, but in some other room, not here. It's, as you say, there's not enough light.
Not a bit of it, Doctor, not a bit of it. Never too dark, as you might say, where the police are concerned.
I couldn't have it, sir. He must have followed me down the hall.
Are you...
That's right, Doctor. I'm Stalker at your service. Inspector Stalker.
Oh, how do you do, Inspector? Mrs. Tancred, you may go.
By your leave, sir. I'll just get some more candles and put them in that bracket by the cupboard. It's not in use.
No, you needn't trouble.
It's no trouble, sir. Excuse me.
First of all, Doctor, I must apologize for intruding as late as this.
Not at all, Inspector. Will you be seated?
Thank you, sir. Thank you kindly. Now, I dare say you're wondering why I'm here.
Oh, yes, I am, rather.
It's a bad business, Doctor. A very bad business.
You mean the murder in the churchyard?
Oh, you've heard about it.
Well, my housekeeper said something about a man being killed with a shovel.
That's right, Doctor. Not much doubt about who did that.
No?
No. The little fellow dropped his dark lantern with the initials on it. They're professional body snatchers. We've had our eye on them for a long time. Speaking of body snatchers, Doctor...
Well...
I expect this anatomy law is pretty hard in you surgeons.
It's an infamous law, sir.
All the same, Doctor, it is the law.
Yes.
And if any surgeon happened to be caught with a body, especially a murdered body...
What are you hinting at?
Nothing, Doctor, nothing. By your leave, I only want to ask a question.
Well?
What time did your friends leave? Now, come, Doctor. As one man of the world to another, do you see any green in my eye? You're not going to say you had no guests when their horse and cart are still at your front door.
They didn't get away.
No, Doctor, they didn't. For they made a little reception committee as they left by the back door. Darby's on the wrists. Snap. Just as I might reach out and touch your wrist. Like this.
What do you mean by Darby's?
Handcuffs. I've got a pair in my pocket. Gags into their mouths. That's to keep them from biting.
But do we have to go on with this? You already seem to know everything I could tell you.
Not exactly everything. I don't know, for instance, where you've hidden the girl's body.
You're a very diligent man, Inspector Stalker.
Thank you, sir. I try to do my duty.
You said a girl?
These gin-muddled degenerates have been watched every second since they left East Hill Churchyard. They hadn't a body then, but they brought one here. And there's only one other person who lives in the same house with them.
Dr. Arnold, sir.
Mrs. Tancred, listen to me.
Yes, sir?
Must you always break in with the most completely old-timed entrances at all the worst period of my life?
I was only trying to be helpful, sir.
That's right, madam. Always be helpful.
You had to have some light. Here's the candles, sir. Part of them. In a big candelabrum. We can hang them in the bracket.
Ma'am, hold up that light. Hold it high.
Really, sir? I'm not in the habit of being spoken to with...
Hold it high, I tell you.
Do as the inspector tells you, Mrs. Tancred.
This is a very fine carpet you've got here, Doctor.
Yes, others have admired it tonight.
But it oughtn't to have footprints on it. Muddy footprints. Footprints leading from the door, past the sofa, past the hearth, over to...
that cupboard. Quite correct.
I think that's done it, Dr. Arnold.
I think it has, Inspector Stalker.
We couldn't have proved anything against you for that churchyard business. But this...
Let me open Bluebeard's cupboard, Inspector. Let me be the first to show you what's inside. You wanted a certain body. It appears you've come to the right place. Now, look.
Lord Almighty.
I'm the body, Mr. Police. standing up. I'm very much alive. I'm wearing a nice new dress that the doctor gave me.
That I gave you?
Don't say anything. Please don't say anything.
Stop a bit, miss. Aren't you Peggy Lester?
Yes. Yes, because the doctor has to be so terribly respectable, and a girl who's fond of him has to come here in secret.
Wait a minute, everybody. Peggy Lester, you're lying.
I am not lying.
So that's it. Why didn't I guess it? It's the oldest body snatcher's trick in the world.
Is it?
Of course, the old pinchpenny like Mother Slade couldn't sacrifice a good household grudge. Of course they brought the body here, instead of taking it to the surgery, where it might get locked up.
Could you be persuaded, Inspector, to tell us just what you're talking about?
The body snatcher, sir.
Well, what about them?
They take a living accomplice and put him into a sack and sell him to a green doctor as a dead man.
Yes, but see here,
they get the best price they can. Then in the middle of the night, that accomplice gets up and robs the doctor's house. And the doctor can't tell us because he's bought illegal goods.
I never intended to go through with it.
No, young woman?
I tell you, I wasn't going to rob the house. They made me do this. I was going to tell Dr. Arnold. When I found out where they were taking me, I pretended to go through with it so I could warn the doctor. They can hurt so much, you'll agree to almost anything.
Oh, that sounds like the truth, but it puts me in a funny position and no mistake.
Well, your three murderers, Inspector, seem to be leaving.
Yes, they're leaving right enough. Trussed up like fowls and under guard.
Does anybody go with them?
Well, how can anybody go with them? I'm willing to believe this girl acted under threats. She's committed no crime. And I don't for the life of me see how we can touch you.
Can't touch me?
No, sir. And confound you for making me lose a night's sleep. There's no body. You didn't even buy a body. Will you tell me, Doctor, just what crime you committed?
And so ends The Body Snatcher. The story of London at midnight, 100 years ago. And tonight's story of suspense. The producer, John Beats, the director, Alexander Semler, the composer, conductor, and John Dixon Carr, the author, are collaborators on Suspense.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
I'll bet you didn't think it was going to end up that way, did you? Tell you the truth, I didn't either. I wasn't expecting this kind of a light-handed ending. And I did learn something. Remember, don't peruse the merchandise. Well, gotta take another break here. But I promise you, as soon as we come back, and that won't be very long, I'm gonna have something interesting from 1937. The Fall of the City was a 1937 CBS radio drama starring Orson Welles and Burgess Meredith. And is considered to be one of the most socially significant and experimental works in the history of radio. It was written in response to the rising tide of fascism in Europe by Archibald MacLeish. You may not be all that familiar with MacLeish. After all, he died at the age of 90 in 1992. Here's a brief list of his accolades. In 1933, he won the Pulitzer Prize for Poetry. Then 20 years later, in 1953, won it again. Also in 1953, he won a National Book Award. Both of these awards were won for his collection of poetry, titled simply Collected Poems, 1917 to 1952. In 1953, he also won the Bullingen Prize for Poetry. Then in 1959, he won the Pulitzer Prize once again. In 1959, he also won the Tony Award for the Best Play. In 1965, he won the Academy Award in the category of Documentary Features. This was the Eleanor Roosevelt story. And then in 1977, he received the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Not bad for one lifetime, is it? Anyway, as promised, here is The Fall of the City, as it played on a Columbia workshop on CBS Radio in 1937.
The Columbia Workshop presents The Fall of the City by Archibald MacLeish. Ladies and gentlemen, this broadcast comes to you from the city. The world has watched with wonder for 3 days. Not for the common occasions of brutal crime, or the usual violence of one sort or another, or coronations of kings or popular festivals. No, but for stranger and disturbing reasons, the resurrection from death in the tomb of a dead woman. Each day for 3 days there has come to the door of her tomb at noon a woman buried. The terror that stands at the shoulder of our time touches the cheek with this. The flesh winces. There have been other omens in other cities, but never of this sort and never so credible. In a time like ours, seemings and portents signify. Ours is a generation when dogs howl and the skin crawls on the skull with its beast foreboding. All men now alive with us have feared. We have smelled the wind in the street that changes weather. We have seen the familiar room grow unfamiliar, the order of numbers alter, the expectation cheat the expectant eye. The appearance defaults with us. Here in this city, the wall of the time cracks. We take you now to the great square of this city. We are here on the central plaza. We are well off to the eastward edge. There's a kind of terrace over the crowd here. It is precisely 12:04. The crowd is enormous. There might be 10,000. There might be more. The whole square is faces. Opposite, over the roofs of the mountains, it is quite clear. There are birds circling. We think they are kites by the look. They're very high. The tomb is off to the right somewhere. We can't see for the great crowd. Close to us here are the cabinet ministers. They stand on a raised platform with awnings. The farmers' wives are squatting on the stones. Their children have fallen asleep on their shoulders. The heat is harsh. The light dazzles like metal. It dazes the air as the clang of a gong does. It is 12:01 now. There is still no sign. They are still waiting. No one doubts that she will come. No one doubts that she will speak, too. 3 times she has not spoken. Now it is 12. Now they are rising. Now the whole plaza is rising. Fathers are lifting their small children. The bloom fans on the platform are motionless. There is no sound but the shuffle of shoe leather. Now even the shoes are still. We can hear the hawks. It is as quiet as that now. It is strange to see such throngs so silent. Nothing yet. Nothing has happened. Wait. There's a stir here to the right of us. They're turning their heads. The crowd turns. The cabinet ministers lean from their balcony. There's no sound. Only the turning.
First the waters rose with no wind.
Listen. That is she. She's speaking.
Then the stones of the temple kindled without flame or tinder of maize leaves.
They see her beyond us. A crowd sees her.
Then there were cries in the night haze, words in a once-heard tongue, the air rustling above us as at dawn with herons. Now it is I who must bring fear, I who am 4 days dead. The tears still unshed for me, all of them. I, for whom a child still calls at nightfall. Death is young in me to fear. My dress is kept still in the press in my bedchamber. No one has broken the dish of the dead woman. Nevertheless, I must speak painfully. I am to stand here in the sun and speak. The city of masterless men will take a master. There will be shouting men, blood after. Do not ask what it means. I do not know. Only sorrow and no hope for it.
She's gone. No, they are still looking.
It is hard to return from the time past. I have come in the dream. We must learn to dream where the crumbling of time, like the ash from a burnt string, has stopped for me. For you, the thread still burns. You take the feathery ash upon your fingers. You bring yourselves from the time past as it pleases you. It is hard to return to the old nearness. Harder to go again.
She's gone. We know because the crowd is closing. All we can see is the crowd closing. We hear the releasing of held breath, the weight shifting, the lifting of shoe leather. The stillness is broken as surface of water is broken, the sound circling from in outward. Small wonder they feel fear before the murders of the famous kings, before imperial cities burned and fell. The dead were said to show themselves and speak. When dead men came, disaster came. Presentiments that let the living on their beds sleep on woke dead men out of death and gave them voices.
Masterless men, when shall it be?
Masterless men will take a master.
What has she said to us?
When shall it be? Masterless men will take a master. Blood after.
What has she said to us?
Blood after!
They are milling around us like cattle that smell death. The whole square is whirling and turning and shouting. One of the ministers raises his arms on the platform. No one is listening. Now they are sounding drums, trying to quiet them like this. No, no, something is happening. There in the far corner. A runner, a messenger, staggering. People are seeing him. People are calling. He comes through the crowd. They are quieter. Only those on the far edge are still shouting. Listen. He's here by the ministers now. He is speaking.
There has come the conqueror. I am to tell you. I've raced over sea land. I've run over cane land. I've climbed over cone land. It was laid on my shoulders, by shall and by shan't, that standing by day and staying by night were not for my lot till I came to the sight of you. Now I have come. Be warned of this conqueror. This one is dangerous. Word has outawed him. East over sea cross has all taken every country. No men are free there. Ears overhear them. Their words are their murderers. Judged before judgment, tried after trial, they die as do animals. Offer their throats as a goat to a slaughterer. Terror has taught them this. Now he is here. I tell you, beware of him. All doors are dangerous. The warders of wealth will admit him by stealth. The lovers of men will invite him as friend. The drinkers of blood will drum in him suddenly. Hope will unlatch to him. Hopelessness open. I say and say truly to all men in honesty, such is this conqueror. Shame is his people. Liquors of spittle. Their lives are unspeakable. They're dying indecent. Wait, I have said to you.
They are leading him out. His legs give. Now he is gone in the crowd. They are silent. No one has spoken since he is speaking. They stand so, circling the governors. No one has spoken or called out. There is no stir at all, nor movement. Even the farthest have stood patiently. They wait, trusting the old men. They wait faithfully, trusting the answer. Now the huddle on the platform opens. A minister turns to them, raising his two arms.
Freemen of this nation! The persuasion of your wills against your wisdom is not dreamed of. We offer themes for your consideration. What is the surest defender of liberty? Is it not liberty? A free people resists by freedom. Not locks, not blockhouses. The future is a mirror while the past marches to meet itself. Go armed, towards arms, peaceful, towards peace. Free and with music towards freedom. But face tomorrow with knives and tomorrow's a knife blade. Murder your foe and your foe will be murder. Even your friends suspected of false speaking. Hands on the door at night and the floorboards squeaking. Those who win by the spear are the spear toters. And what do they win? Spears. What else is there? If their hands let go, they have nothing to hold by. They are no more free than a paralytic propped against a tree is. With the armored man, the arm is upheld by the weapon. The man is worn by the knife.
I wish you could all see this as we do. The whole plaza full of these people, their colorful garments, the harsh sunlight, the water cellars swinging enormous gourds, the orator there on the stone platform, the temple behind him, the high pyramid, the hawks overhead in the sky, teetering slow to the windward, swift to the downwind, the houses blind with the blank sun on them.
Once depend on iron for your freedom, and your freedom's iron. Once overcome your resistors with force, and your force will resist you. You will never be free of force. Never of arms unarmed. Will the father return home? The lover to her loved? The mature man with fruit orchard, walking at peace in that beauty? The years of his trees to assure him? Force is a greater enemy than this conqueror. A treacherous weapon. But nevertheless, my friends, there is a weapon. Weakness conquers. Against chainlessness, who breaks? Against walllessness, who walks? Against forcelessness, who forces? Against the feather of the thistle is blunted sharpest metal. No edge cuts seed fluff. And this conqueror, unresisted, will conquer no longer. A posturer, beating his blows upon verdicts, shifting his guard against shadows, snickers will sound among road menders, titters be stifled by laundresses, coarse guffaws among chambermaids, and reddened with rage, he will roar. He will sweat in his uniform foolishly. He will disappear. No one hear of him, for there is a weapon, my friend. Reason and truth are that weapon. So let this conqueror come. Show him no hindrance. Suffer his flag and his drum. Words win.
There's the shout now. He's done. He's climbing down. A great speech. They're all smiling and pressing around him. The women are squatting in full sunlight. They're opening packages. Bread, we'd say from the look. Yes, bread. Bread wrapped between corn leaves. They're squatting to eat. They're quite contented and happy. Women are calling their men from the sunny stones. There are flutes sounding away off. We can't see for the shifting and moving. Yes, there are flutes in the cool shadow. Children are dancing in intricate figures. Even a few old men are dancing. You'd say they'd never fear to see them dancing. That's odd. The music has stopped. There's something... It's a man there on the far side. He's pointing. He seems to be pointing back through the farthest street. The people are twisting and rising, bread in their fists. We can't see what it is. Wait. It's a messenger. It must be a messenger. Yes, it's a message. Another. Here he is at the turn of the street, trotting, his neck back at the nape. He looks tired. He winds through the crowd with his mouth open, laboring. The people are offering water. He pushes away from them. Now he has come to the stone steps, to the ministers.
Stand by. We're in.
Listen. He's leaning on the stone. He's speaking.
Let us come to conquer. I am to tell him. I have run over Kwanan. I have climbed over Kronan. I have crossed over mountains. It was laid on my shoulders by Shell and by Shant. That standing by day and staying by night were not for my luck till I came to the sight of you. Now I have come. I bear words. Beware of this conqueror. The fame of his story like flame in the winter grass widens before him. Beached on our shore with the dawn over shoulder, the lawns were still cold when he came to the sheep meadows. Sun could not keep to him, so was he forward. Fame is his sword. No man opposing him still grows his glory. He needs neither foeman nor fixed set of blows to gather his victories, nor a foe's match to earn him his battles. He brings his own enemy. He baggages with him his closet antagonist, his private opposer. He's setting him up at every road corner, a figure of horror, with blood for his color, fist for his hand, reek where he stands, hate for his heat, sneers for his mouth, clouts for his clothes, oaths if he speak, and he's knocking him down in every town square, till hairs on his blade and blood's all about like dust in a drought. And the people are shouting, flowers him flinging, music him singing, and bringing him gold, and holding his heels, and feeling his thighs, till their eyes start and their hearts swell. And they're telling his praises like lays of the heroes and chiefs of antiquity. Such are his victories. So does he come. So he approaches. No man to conquer, yet as a conqueror marches he forward. Stands on your mountains, soon to descend on you.
That touched them. That frightened them. Some of them pointed to East Hill. Some of them mocked at the ministry. Freedom. Freedom for what? To die in the rat trap? They're frantic with anger and plain fear. They're sold out, they say. You can hear them. Down with the government. Down with the orators. Down with the liberal learned minds. Down with the mouths and the loose tongues in them. Down with the lazy lot. They've sold us. We're sold out. Talking is done for us. They're boiling around us like mullet. It smells sharp. We can't move for the mob. They're crazy with terror. Over the crowd somewhere. They hear it. They're quieting down. It's the priests. We see them now. It's the priests on the pyramid. There might be 10 of them, black with their hair tangled. The smoke of their fires flat in the quick wind. They stand in the thick of the smoke by the stone of the victims. Their knives catch in the steep sun.
Send your gods, remember.
They're shouting. Listen.
Let the world be saved by surrendering the world. Not otherwise shall it be saved.
And your gods, remember.
Let evil be overcome by the coming over of evil. Your heart shall be elsewhere.
And your gods, remember.
Turn to your gods. The conqueror cannot take you.
And your gods.
The narrow dark will keep you.
And your gods.
In God's house is no breaking.
And your gods.
In God's silence is sleep is.
Lay up your will with God.
Stones cannot steal you.
Lay up your mind with God.
Blade cannot blind you.
Lay up your heart with God.
Danger departs from you.
It's a wonderful thing to see this crowd responding. Even the simplest citizens feel the emotion. There's hardly a sound now in the square. It's wonderful. Very impressive. The priest there on the pyramid, the smoke blowing, the bright sun, the faces.
Confusion of reason when all is illusion. In the day of tyrants of tongues, when the truth is for hire. In the day of deceit, when ends meet.
Thank you, God.
In the day of divisions of nation, when hope is derision. In the day of the supping of hate, when the soul is corrupted. In the day of despair, when the heart's bare.
Thank you, God.
A kind of dance is beginning. A serpent of people, a current of people, coiling and curling through people. A circling of people through people, like water through water.
Out of the stir of the sun, out of the shout of thunder, out of the hush of the storm, we draw the heart.
A very young girl is leading them. They've torn the shawl from her bare breast. They are giving her flowers. Her mouth laughs. Her eyes are not laughing.
We love here, with all the corn there, beneath the mountain of the
sound. The crowd shrieks. She's reaching the temple. She's climbing it. Others are following. 5, 10, hundreds are following. Crowding the stairway. She's almost there. The crowd's calling. She looks back. The priests are surrounding her. Wait. Wait, something's happened. One of the ministers, one of the oldest, the general, the one in the feathered coat, he's driving them down with a stamp of a banner. He's climbed after them, driving them down. They're shouting and yelling enough that they're going.
Men.
He's telling them off, too.
Oh, men.
You can hear him.
Men! Oh, men, listen! Fist your neck on your neck bone. The knife will wait in the pit for you. There is a time for everything. Time to be thinking of heaven. Time of your own skins. Half your eyes to the windward. Do you see smoke on those mountains? The smoke is the smoke of town. And who makes it? The conqueror. And where will he march now? Onward. The heel of the future descends on you.
He has them now. Even the priests have seen it. They're all looking away here to the east. There's smoke, too, filling the valleys like thunderheads.
You are foolish, old men. You ought to be flogged for your foolishness. Your grandfathers died to be free. And you juggle with freedom. Do you think you're free by a law like the falling of apples in autumn? You thought you were safe in your liberties. You thought you could always quibble. You can't. You take my word for it. Freedom's the rarest bird. You risk your neck to snare it. It's gone while your eyeballs stare. Those who'd lodge with a tyrant, thinking to feed at his fire and leave him again when they're fed, are plain fools. Were bred to it. Brood of the servile races. Born with a hangdog face.
They're all pointing and pushing together. The women are shouldering baskets. Bread, children. They smell smoke in the air. They smell terror.
Children and doing the strong man's will. The free will fight for their freedom. They're free men first. They feed meager old fat, but there's free men. Everything else comes after. Wolf, roof, wrath, even the sky and the life of it.
The sun is yellow with smoke. The town's burning. The war's at the broken bridge.
You, are you free? Will you fight? There are still itches for fighting. There is still an itch in the streets. You can stand on the stairs and meet him. You can hold in the dark of a hall. You can die. Or your children can crawl for it.
They won't listen. They're shouting and screaming and running. The square is full of deserters with more coming. Every street from the bridge is full of deserters. They're rolling in with the smoke blowing behind them. The plaza's choked with the smoke and the struggling of stragglers. They're climbing the platforms, driving the minister, shouting. One speaks and another.
The city is doomed! There's no holding it! Let the conqueror have it! It's his!
The age is his! It's his century!
He's one man! Feared by thousands!
Who can defend us from one man?
Throwing their arms away. Their bows are in bonfires. The plaza is littered with torn plumes. Spear handles.
Merciless men! Merciless men must take a master!
Order must master us! Freedom's for fools! Force is the peasantry!
Freedom has eaten our strength and corrupted our virtue!
Men must be ruled!
Fools must be mastered!
Vigor and fast will restore us our dignity!
Chains will be liberty!
The last defenders are coming. They whirl from the streets like wild leaves on a wind. The square scatters them. Now they are fewer. 10 together, or 5. They come with their heads turned, their eyes back. Now there are none. The street's empty, in shadow. The crowd is retreating, watching the empty street. The shouts die. The voices are silent. They're watching. They stand in the slant of the sunlight, silent and watching. The silence after the drums echoes the drumbeat. Now there's a sound. They see him. They must see him. They're shading their eyes from the sun. There's a rustle of whispering. We can't see for the glare of it. Yes? Yes? He's there in the end of the street, in the shadow. We see him. He looks huge, a head taller than anyone, broad as a brass door. A hard hero, heavy of heel on the brick, clanking with metal, the helm closed on his head, the eye holes hollow. He's coming. He's clear of the shadow. The sun takes him. They cover their faces with fingers. They cower before him. They fall. They sprawl on the stone. He's alone where he's walking. He marches with rattle of metal. He tramples his shadow. He mounts by the pyramid, stamps on the stairway, turns. His arm rises. His visor is opening. There's no one. There's no one at all. No one. The helmet is hollow. The metal is empty. The armor is empty. I tell you, there's no one at all there. There's only the metal, the barrel of metal, the bundle of armor. It's empty. They don't see. They lie on the pavement. They lie in the burnt spears, the ashes of arrows. They lie there. They don't see or they won't see. They are silent. The people invent their oppressors. They wish to believe in them. They wish to be free of their freedom, released from their liberty. The long labor of liberty ended. They lie there. Look, it's his arm. It is rising. His arm's rising. They're watching his arm as it rises. They stir. They cry. They cry out. They are shouting. They're shouting with happiness. Listen. They're shouting like troops in a victory. Listen. The city of masterless men has found a master. You say it was they were the conquerors. They that had conquered. The city is fallen.
Here's a newsflash for you from December the 7th of 1941.
In this nation's capital, the Japanese attack on Hawaii and the Philippine Islands and the torpedo assault on two American cargo ships in the Pacific have come with an electrifying shock. There are crowds right now gathered in front of the White House and the State Department and the Japanese Embassy. They are sober, quiet crowds. There is more excitement among a crowd of 150 newspaper men jammed within the lobby of the White House executive office. For a comparatively few feet away, the president is dictating the first draft of a message to Congress. That much is announced at the White House. And this means that a joint session of Congress will be held probably as early as tomorrow, at which the president will announce the Japanese attack upon the United States and ask for a declaration of war.
All right, the sound quality of that was not terrific, but I really did think it was worth hearing, even though it required a little extra effort on everyone's part. Sorry about another thing, too. I'm sorry to say it, but, well, here comes another break. Well, okay, we're going to work our way out now with a visit from the mysterious traveler from April the 16th of 1944, a story called The Accusing Corpse.
The Mysterious Traveler.
This is the mysterious traveler, inviting you to join him on another journey into the realm of the strange and terrifying. I hope you will enjoy the trip, that it will thrill you a little and chill you a little. So settle back, get a good grip on your nerves. Where are we going? We're going to journey to the grave and learn the secrets of the dead in a tale titled The Accusing Corpse. Some years ago, when I was a county coroner, I was called in on a most interesting case. A case which had begun in the country home of Philip Drake, the wealthy stockbroker.
Roger, thank goodness you were able to get here in time.
I left town right after I received your call. What's wrong, Philip? You sounded so upset over the phone.
It's Vivian. She's upstairs in her room packing. She says she's leaving me.
Leaving you? Why?
She seems to feel our marriage has been a mistake. Roger, won't you speak to her? Persuade her to stay. After all, she is your sister.
I'm afraid, Philip, that Vivian and I have never been as close as sister and brother should be. She's always been wild and spoiled. Perhaps, Philip, it would be better if you were to let her go.
No, I couldn't do that. I love her, Roger. I wouldn't want to live without her. Won't you please try to persuade her to stay?
All right, Philip. I'll do my best. But I must warn you, I haven't much influence
over
her.
Philip, I'm all packed and ready to... Why, Roger, darling, what a surprise. What are you doing here?
Vivian, Philip has told me. Now, surely you can't be serious. You know how he loves you, everything he's done to make you happy.
Now, Roger, you aren't going to start on that, are you?
Someday, Vivian, you'll get just what you deserve for walking over people, breaking their hearts. Every time I think of you being my sister, I feel...
Roger,
like I...
please. Would you mind waiting in the other room? I'd like to speak to Vivian alone.
Oh, all right, Philip. Call me when you want me.
Really, Philip, no matter what you have to say, you're just wasting your time.
Oh, Vivian, how can you do this to me? You know I love you, but I'd do anything to make you happy.
That's sweet of you, dear. Would you mind lending me your car to get to town?
If you leave me, Vivian, you won't get a cent. Not a cent, do you hear?
Really? Did you ever stop to think, Philip, that there might be another man with more money than you?
Another man? Oh, no, there couldn't be.
And why not?
But we've only been married 3 months. There couldn't be anyone in that time.
Oh, but there was.
Oh, Vivian, in spite of what you've done, I'm willing to forgive you and start over with you.
But, darling, I don't want you to forgive me. I want you to forget me.
Vivian, you can't do this to me. I love you. I won't let you go.
I really must be saying goodbye now. He's waiting for me in town, and I don't want to be late.
If I can't have you, no one else will, do you hear?
Oh, really, Philip, you're being ridiculous. I must go.
No!
Philip, what are you doing? A gun.
Yes, Vivian, a gun. I told you if I couldn't have you, no one else would.
Oh, Philip, you're insane. Put that gun down.
If you don't change your mind about leaving, I'll kill you.
Even with that gun, you can't keep me, do you hear? I'd sooner die than go on living with you. I'm going. And you're not going to stop. You shot
me. Vivian.
Philip, what happened? I thought I heard... Vivian.
Roger. Is she dead?
Yes. Philip, do you know what this may mean? Life imprisonment, perhaps. Even the electric chair.
I know. Nothing seems to matter now.
But you simply can't throw your life away like that, Philip. Oh, even if Vivian was my sister, I don't mind telling you that I always felt you were far too good for her. She didn't deserve to be your wife.
Oh, please, Roger.
Now, look, Philip. If we were to get rid of the body... Who could possibly know that she didn't leave here tonight as she'd planned?
Oh, it wouldn't work, Roger. You can't get away with murder.
That's nonsense, Philip. Now, if we were to bury her in the woods, no one would ever find the body.
Bury her in the woods? I couldn't do that.
Then I'll do it. You can wait here till I return.
But, Roger, what if...
Philip, you must let me handle this. You better give me the gun.
All right, Roger. You are.
Good. Now, you wait here while I get rid of the body.
Philip watched, spellbound, unable to say a word, as Roger picked up the body and left the room. As Roger, carrying his burden past the gardener's shed, he picked up a shovel In a few moments, he reached the woods which began at the rear of the house and extended for miles. He carefully made his way through the forest underbrush until he was well out of sight of the house. Then he stopped and looked about.
I think this is quite far enough.
I think you can put me down now, Roger. I'm tired of being carried like a sack of potatoes.
All right. Well, let me congratulate you on your performance as a corpse.
Do you think he suspects anything?
Of course he doesn't. He's positive that he shot and killed you.
You've got the gun, haven't you?
Well, certainly I've got it. You don't think I was going to let him discover that the bullets had been removed and blank cartridges substituted, do you?
Oh, no. Not you, Roger. You always know what you're doing.
I always try to, my dear sister.
You don't think Philip will give you any trouble, do you? Outside of being in love with me, he isn't an utter fool.
Don't worry, I can handle Philip. Now, here's the key to the apartment I rented in town. You'll find my car a quarter of a mile down the road.
All right. I'll be waiting for you at the apartment.
I'll be there in a few hours. Now, let me see. Yes, this seems like a nice place to dig.
The next morning, Roger called on Philip at his office. With a calculating glance, he noted that Philip's eyes were bloodshot, that his hand trembled as the two shook hands.
How are you, Philip?
I couldn't sleep at all last night. I kept thinking of Vivian. And what if her disappearance is noticed? People begin asking questions.
Now, all you have to do is tell them that Vivian left you and you don't know where she is. Or things like that happen every day.
You've been very helpful to me, Roger. If ever I get a chance to repay you for it, rest assured, I will.
That's very good of you, Philip. Truth of the matter is, you could do me a favor if you would.
Of course. What is it?
Well, I'm in the midst of a business deal, and I find myself a little short of capital. If you could lend me some money, I'd appreciate it.
Oh, certainly, Roger. How much do you need?
$20,000.
$20,000? That's quite a lot.
Naturally, Philip, if you feel you can't lend it to me, I'll go to a bank and try to borrow it.
Oh, it isn't that I can't lend it to you, Roger. It's just that the amount surprised me. Shall I make the check out to you?
Yes, if you please.
All right.
I can't tell you how much I appreciate this, Philip.
As Philip wrote out a check for $20,000, Roger smiled. Things were working out just as he had planned. An hour later, Roger entered an old brownstone house and went to apartment 2C.
Roger, did you get it?
What does this look like?
Oh, Roger, that's wonderful. Now we can clear out and... Why, there isn't $100,000 here.
No, my dear. I only got $20,000 from him.
But we were after $100,000. Why didn't you get it all this morning when you saw him?
My dear Vivian, it simply isn't done that way. Blackmail is an art. An art that calls for the use of psychology. Philip will give us many times over the money I hold in my hand. All in due time, of course.
You mean I'll have to go on hiding in this miserable apartment until you finish your little game with him? Never being able to leave it for fear someone will recognize it.
Come now, Vivian. You've got the radio and books.
I won't spend weeks in this apartment, I tell you. I won't. My arm!
You'll do exactly as I say, Vivian. Exactly, do you understand?
Roger, my arm, you're hurting
me. It's nothing to what I'll do if you disobey me. Do I make myself clear?
Yes, yes!
A week passed. A week in which Roger patiently bided his time. For time, he knew, was working on his side against Philip. Then one morning he called on Philip at his office.
Good morning, Philip. How are you?
How do you expect me to be? This past week I've been able to think of nothing but Vivian and what happened that night.
Philip, you must stop brooding over it. Whatever happened was her fault, not yours.
Yes, you're right. Perhaps what I need is a vacation.
Yes, of course. A trip would do you a world of good. And if I could afford it, I'd go along with you.
You mean you haven't any money?
I'm afraid not, Philip. That's what I've come to see you about. I must have $40,000 at once.
$40,000?
Yes, I know it's a good deal of money, Philip, but without it, I'll be ruined.
Well, naturally, I want to help you, Roger, but $40,000?
If I don't get the $40,000, Philip, it may mean prison for me. Now, you wouldn't want to see that happen, would you?
Well, of course not, Roger, but...
After all, Philip, I saved you from prison. In fact, I made myself an accomplice to Vivian's murder by not turning you over to the police.
Well, yes, I know,
now,
but...
You could hardly expect me to remain loyal to you if you weren't willing to help me, could you?
I see. It seems I haven't any choice. Very well, Roger. I'll write you out a check.
Roger's eyes gleamed in amusement as he accepted the check from Philip. There was no longer any doubt that Philip understood him perfectly. Things were working out exactly as he had planned. Later that day, Roger went back to the old brownstone house. There was a smile on his lips as he entered apartment 2C.
Look at this. $40,000 in cash.
Oh, Roger.
Now, wasn't this worth staying and hiding for, Vivian? And there's plenty more where this came from. Who could that be? You better get behind that screen.
No. All right, Roger.
Yes?
CLD for Miss Brown. It amounts to $64.
Oh, you must be mistaken. There's no Miss Brown here.
This is the address she gave. It's in care of Mr. Roger Martinson. Is that your name?
Why, yes, but I don't know any...
Those packages are for me, Roger. How much did you say the COD was?
$64, miss.
Oh. Here you are.
Thank you, miss. Here's your receipt. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
When did you buy those clothes?
This morning.
You mean you went out shopping in spite of what I told you?
Well, I was sick of being cooped up in this apartment day and night. I had to do something for a change.
And what of my plans? You risked everything with so much at stake.
Roger, stop looking at me like that. I tell you, I couldn't stand being cooped up in this apartment any longer.
But I give you orders to stay here.
Well, I won't. I want you to get the rest of the money at once so we can clear out. And if you don't, I'll go shopping whenever I feel like it. You can't make me stay here.
You'll do exactly as I say, Vivian. I won't allow anything or anyone to interfere with my plans. I've worked out every step perfectly, and there isn't going to be any slip-up.
Another week passed, a week in which Roger made no effort to see Philip. Then early one evening, he got into his car and drove out of the city to Philip's home in the country.
Oh, it's you, Roger. Come in.
Good evening, Philip. Oh, where are the servants?
This is their night off.
Oh. You're not looking well at all, Philip. You shouldn't remain in this house by yourself.
What difference does it make where I am? Wherever I go, the memory of that night follows. It's hard to believe that it was only 2 weeks ago tonight that I killed her.
2 weeks ago tonight? Well, so it was. Oh, by the way, Philip, do you think you might possibly lend me $60,000?
$60,000? You can't be serious.
Oh, but I am.
But I lent you that much already.
Yes, I know, but I must have more.
No. I won't give you another cent. You've blackmailed me enough.
Blackmail is a harsh word.
What else can you call it? Now, you're just as hard and grasping as Vivian was.
Yes, but you must remember I'm alive and she isn't.
I suppose you're glad she's dead. In life, she was worth nothing to you. In death, you're able to get $60,000 for her. In death? How do I know she is dead?
But don't be foolish, Philip. You saw her lying on the floor in this very room.
Yes. But how do I know she's dead? It was you who examined her and told me so. And you buried the body by yourself.
Well, I just wanted to spare you, Philip.
Just exactly where did you bury Vivian? As a matter of fact, how do I know the whole affair isn't staged for my special benefit? So that you can extort money from me.
Oh, surely you don't believe that, Philip. Why, you shot her with your own gun.
Yes. And you took the gun away from me immediately after the shooting. Suddenly that whole affair is becoming very clear to me.
I tell you, she's dead, Philip, and buried out in the woods.
Then I want to see the grave and the body you say is in it.
But this is ridiculous. I won't go searching for a grave in the middle of the night.
You shouldn't have to search for it, Roger. Not if you really dug one. Come along. We can pick up a shovel at the tool shed.
I won't do it. I won't do it.
I said come along, Roger.
Oh, very well. But I'm not certain I'll be able to find the grave. After all, the woods is fairly large, and it's been 2 weeks since I buried it.
That's all right, Roger. We'll stay out there until you do find her.
later, Philip and Roger picked up the shovel at the tool shed and then continued on their way to the woods that began at the rear of the house. Neither of the men spoke as they entered the woods, Roger leading the way with a flashlight. Several times he stopped, trying to get his bearings, then plunged on again, hoping to find a familiar landmark. It became apparent that Roger was growing less and less sure of himself.
Oh, the grave is someplace around here. I'm certain of it. Perhaps we ought to come back in the daytime. It might be easier to find it then.
I know, Roger. You shouldn't have any trouble finding it now, if it exists.
It does exist, I tell you. It's just that the woods are so confusing at night. Everything looks so different.
Just keep on searching, Roger.
And perhaps this is the spot. It looks something like it.
Well, is it or isn't it?
I don't know. It looks like the place where I buried her, and yet I'm not certain.
There's only one way to make certain, and that's to start digging. Here's the shovel.
But suppose this isn't the spot?
Then we'll dig somewhere else. In fact, we'll dig up the entire woods if necessary. After all, you're certain she is buried in the woods, aren't you? Go ahead, Roger. Start digging.
Oh, very well.
Well, Roger, you've been digging for 20 minutes now, and you haven't uncovered a body.
Philip, I told you I wasn't sure this was the spot where I buried her.
You're a great actor, Roger. But I'm afraid this time you've overplayed your role.
What do you mean?
Vivian isn't dead. And there's no use your pretending she is. Everything that's happened was part of a scheme the two of you planned to extort money from me.
I tell you she is dead.
Then where's the body?
I thought this was the spot that I must be mistaken at. I'm sure I didn't bury her any deeper than this, but if I... Philip, turn the flashlight this way.
What is it?
Look. Do you see what I've uncovered?
A hand?
Yes. This is the spot where I buried her, Philip. Just a few more shovelfuls and I'll have her uncovered.
Oh, it can't be.
There. There you are, Philip. Of course, she's been in the ground for 2 weeks, but I think you can easily recognize that it's Vivian.
Yes, it's Vivian.
And look, Philip, here's the bullet hole under her heart. The bullet hole that you made.
I don't want to see any more. I've had enough.
You should trust me a little more, Philip. Everything I did was for your own good. After all, you don't want to go to the electric chair, do you?
I don't care what happens anymore. I can't stand having her death on my conscience any longer. I'm going to call the police.
Don't be a fool, Philip. You know it might well mean the electric chair.
I'll take my chances. Anything's better than going on living the way I have these past 2 weeks. I'm going back to the house and call the police.
Philip, come back. Come back. Philip!
Operator.
Philip, wait. Wait, don't do anything foolish.
No, you cut me off. Take your hands off that phone, Roger.
All I want you to do, Philip, is to listen to me for a few minutes. At the end of that time, you may do as you please. Now, that's fair enough, isn't it?
Nothing you can say will make me change my mind about calling the police.
Listen to me first. Then if you still want to call the police, you can. Now, please put the receiver down, Philip. Yeah, that's it.
Well, what do you want to tell me?
Well, do you mind if I mix myself a drink first? It's been a rather difficult evening.
Very well.
Oh, well, what about one for you, Philip? You look as though you could stand a drink.
No, thank you.
Oh, nonsense. Do you good.
What is it you want to say to me, Roger?
Huh? Oh, yes, say to you. Oh, yes. Yes, of course. Here's your drink, Philip.
Thank you.
Well, now, what shall we drink to? We'll drink to your good luck. Come what may. Yeah, there. I feel a good deal better.
All right. Now that we've had our drinks, what have you got to say?
Oh, yes. What I wanted to say was I never let anything interfere with my plans, Philip.
What do you mean by that?
Simply that I can't allow you to go to the police, and therefore you shan't. It would spoil my plan.
Oh, it would it? Well, I'd like to see you stop me.
I have, Philip. In a very little while, in fact, in just a few seconds,
You'll be dead.
Dead? What are you saying?
Yes, Philip. The drink I mixed for you was poisoned.
Poison?
Aren't you finding that it's becoming difficult to breathe?
Oh, no. You couldn't have. My throat. It burns.
Yes, I know, Philip. It'll all be over in a matter of seconds.
No. I see it all. You might have...
Yes, Philip. Just a week ago tonight, she died according to plan.
Uncle, please, Joe.
I'm afraid, Philip, that you haven't the strength left to reach the telephone.
I will.
I'm afraid you and Vivian never had a chance, Philip. I had things worked out perfectly, down to the smallest detail. Hello, operator. Operator, please connect me with the police.
It was at this point that I was called into the case. Inspector Carlton called me an hour after Roger Martinson had phoned the police. When I arrived at the Drake mansion, I examined the body of Vivian Drake, then that of her husband, Philip. When I had finished my examination, I entered the library, where Inspector Carlton was questioning Roger Martinson.
Hello, Doc. Oh, Doc, this is Roger Martinson. Mr. Martinson, this is Dr. Smith, the county coroner.
How do you do?
Hello.
I'll be with you in a few minutes, Doc. Just stick around. Now, Mr. Martinson, you were telling me how you came to this house 2 weeks ago tonight to see your sister and found that she was gone.
Yes. Yes, my brother-in-law, Philip, told me that she'd gone on a vacation. Now, I thought it strange at the time that she should have gone away without saying goodbye to me, as we were always very close. But days passed, and I didn't hear from her.
Tell me, was it like your sister to go away and not write?
No, no, it wasn't, and that's what worried me so. These past 2 weeks, Philip kept putting me off when I inquired about Vivian's whereabouts. Well, tonight I couldn't stand it any longer. And I came to this house to have it out with him.
What did your brother-in-law say when he saw you?
Well, he was quite agitated at my unexpected arrival. When I couldn't get any satisfaction out of him regarding Vivian, I threatened to go to the police. Then he broke down and confessed that he murdered Vivian.
When did he murder her?
He told me that he'd done it 2 weeks ago tonight. Why, that was the very night I'd come here to see Vivian, and he told me that she'd left for a vacation.
I see. Go on.
Naturally, when he told me he'd murdered her, I was aghast. He led me to the woods and showed me the grave. We returned to the house, and before I knew what had happened, Philip had taken poison. Then I called the police.
Well, it seems like a plain case of murder and suicide. Outside of a few questions at the inquest, I don't think we'll trouble you anymore, Mr.
Oh,
Martinson.
That's quite all right, Inspector. I shall be at your service anytime.
Just a moment, Mr. Martinson.
Yes.
I was very much interested in hearing what you had to say to the inspector regarding the murder of your sister. You say that your brother-in-law confessed to murdering her 2 weeks ago tonight?
That's right.
That would be April 2nd, wouldn't it?
Yes, that's correct.
Then you never saw her alive after the night of April 2nd?
Why, no, of course not.
What are you getting at, Doc?
Please, Inspector.
Mr. Martinson, would you mind telling me where you live?
At 425 West 107th Street.
Tell me, were some clothes delivered to that address in your care a week ago today, April 9th?
Clothes?
Yes. To be exact, a woman's sports suit, which cost $64 and arrived COD.
Why, no.
You're lying, Mr. Martinson. I have in my hand a slip of paper that not only proves that you're lying, but that will send you to the electric chair.
Doc, what do you say?
Yes, Inspector. Mr. Martinson's plan was perfect, but he slipped up badly. He forgot to search Vivian Drake's clothing before he buried her. When I examined her body just now, I found in one of her pockets this receipted bill bearing the date April 9th. That proves beyond a doubt that she wasn't murdered by her husband on April 2nd, as Mr. Martinson here claimed.
No.
Yes, Mr. Martinson, the corpse has accused you from the grave of murder, and has given us proof of your guilt.
No, it can't be. I had everything planned perfectly. Perfectly, do you hear? Down to the last detail. I couldn't have failed.
mysterious traveler again. Have you enjoyed our little trip to the grave? Poor Roger. What a pity. After all that planning and hard work, to be tripped up by a sail slip found on a corpse. Just goes to prove that you have to be more careful when you're burying people you've murdered. Now, I recall another case where a woman drugged her husband and... Oh, you're getting off at the next stop. I'm sorry. I hope you'll join me again soon.
In tonight's program, The Accusing Corpse, Don Randolph played Roger. Also featured were Maurice Tarplin and Philip Clark. The Mysterious Traveler, written by Bob Arthur and David Cogan, is directed by Jock McGregor. Original music was played by Doc Whipple. This is Mutual.
Well, that's another show in the can. I hope you enjoyed yourself and will come back next time. Until then, I am Gary Clinton. Good night. Or afternoon, or whenever you listen to this thing.